If it hadn't been for the blood, he would have thought she was asleep. She was smiling. The contents of her abdomen lay beside her, amongst the tea leaves and the cigarette butts on the ground, and she was smiling. There weren't many places that Inspector Chitin Ikmen could go to drink coffee and smoke in peace these days, but Burhan the Gypsy's coffee house was one of them. In the ancient Roma quarter of Sulukule, Burhan's was one of the few traditional businesses that remained. Pressed tight up against the Byzantine walls of what had once been Constantinople, the Gypsy's tiny business struggled on in spite of the mass construction of new houses that had mushroomed around it. That so many of the new properties were either empty or being rented by refugees with money from Syria made Ikmen angry. In a city whose population had grown from 2 to 14 million in 30 years, people needed housing more desperately than ever. But much of what had been built in Sulukule was so expensive, nobody wanted to move in. And the gypsies, whose hand-built homes had been demolished to make way for the new development, were too poor to even consider returning. Rehoused in flats many kilometers from the city, they mourned the demise of their old way of life in silence. And now, here in Sulukule, death had come. Ikmen, a weary, skinny individual in his late 50s, had been policing the city of Istanbul all his adult life. A product of the heyday of Ataturk's secular republic, he'd watched his country change over the years, sometimes with delight, sometimes with dismay. That morning, he'd felt in need of comfort, which to Ikmen meant things he remembered from his youth, like run-down coffee joints, too many cigarettes, and gossipy old gypsies like Burhan Bey. As soon as he'd arrived, the gypsy had buttonholed him.
"Ah, Chitin Bey," he'd said, "before you sit and relax, could you call the municipality for me? We are alive with rats. Going out to the dustbins, you take your life in your hands. I have complained and complained, but no one listens. They listen to you. Will you?"
"I'll go out and have a look," Ikmen said.
"No, it's bad out there. Don't."
But Ikmen had ignored him. In the past, officials, including police officers, had been able to phone up local authority offices and get problems dealt with. But not anymore. Now municipalities wanted detailed descriptions of evidence, including photographs. He lit a cigarette and went outside to look for droppings and teeth marks. A proud late adopter of iPhone technology, Ikmen had spent a long time learning how to use his phone as a camera. But now that he could do it, he did it all the time. Photographs of grandchildren vied for space on his device with pictures of victims of assault. Half-chewed bread crusts and what looked like large grains of brown rice had given the game away immediately. Rat droppings were so distinctive. But he went and looked behind the dustbins anyway, in case he could actually see a rat. What he found was the girl, eviscerated, collared russet from the chest down by her own dried blood. What was that smile? Rigor? It looked serene. How could that be? Unless she'd been drugged when she died. But then her face would have sagged. She was young, but he had seen younger. And although everybody he'd ever seen in his long years in homicide had shocked Chetin Ikmen, there was a side to this girl's death that made him physically shudder. That was because as soon as he'd seen her, he'd recognized her. And having recognized her, he marveled at how long it had taken her to turn up dead.
"I hate her."
"Hate is a very strong word, Silvio." The smoke-dried, middle-aged man looked up into the priest's eyes.
"What do you know?"
he said. "About women? Not much. But I know a lot about hate. Mainly, I know that it leads nowhere. I also know that we have more than enough of it in this part of the world."
Silvio shook his head. "She tries to make our daughter eat out of the bowl for the cat."
"That's wrong, if it's true. Have you seen her do it?"
"No, but the girl has told me, and why would she lie? The woman is a bigot, and more seriously, she makes our other children bigots too," Silvio said.
This wasn't the first time that Father Benito Esposito had been obliged to listen to parishioner Silvio de Mango ranting about his wife. According to Father Esposito's predecessor, Father Luigi Rossi, there had been trouble between the pair for years. but in the past few months it had escalated, which was understandable in light of what was happening to the family.
"Whenever I leave the house, I fear I will come back and find my daughter dead," Silvio continued.
"I think you may be overreacting."
"You think?"
He moved his head close to the priest.
"You've only lived in this country for 5 years. You've no idea what they're like. I grew up with their intolerance, their ignorance, and I've watched it grow. My in-laws are amongst the worst."
The heavy door of the Church of St. Anthony of Padua creaked open. Two men, both tall and smartly dressed, walked in. Their confidence, combined with the fact that neither man crossed himself, made the priest nervous. They could be officials. After apologizing to his parishioner, he stood and walked over to them.
"Can I help you?"
Mass in English was due to start in less than an hour, so the church was already bright with candles, and because it was April, heavily decorated with fresh spring tulips. Father Benito prayed that the two Turks hadn't come to tell him that the place had to close because of terrorist threats. The taller and older of the two held up what Benito recognized as police ID. "My name is Inspector Mehmet Suleiman," he said. "I'm looking for Father Benito Esposito." The priest bowed his head.
"You have found him. What can I do for you, Inspector?"
"I've been told by the wife of one of your parishioners that you may be with her husband."
"Who?"
Benito looked across at Silvio, who was praying. "Silvio de Mango," the police officer said. Silvio, hearing his name, looked up.
"What?"
Suleiman and the other officer ignored Benito and walked towards the white-faced man. "Silvio de Mango?"
"Yes?"
"My name is Inspector Suleiman," the policeman said. "We've just come from your apartment. We need to speak to you."
"What about?"
They sat one each side of him, Suleiman and the other officer. Silvio was fragile. Benito wanted to intervene. How did he do that without giving offense? But the policeman didn't even manage to open his mouth before Silvio put his head in his hands and wailed.
"Oh, my God," he said. "It's about her, isn't it? You've come to tell me those bastards have killed her."